You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 10th, 2017. And this week, we play a game where we visit an old home in the Pacific Northwest and learn secrets about our family. But enough about Gone Home. We're talking about what remains of Edith Finch.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alborn.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but humorless conversation about video games. Mm-hmm. And this week, we're doing a debrief, and we are doing it on what remains of Edith Finch.
A mouthful of a game title, I gotta say.
But I kind of like it.
Do you?
I mean, there's very few games that so aggressively buck SEO.
yeah. Only like Kingdom Hearts X3rd, yeah, like exactly. The Reckoning kind of stuff.
And even so, that's probably secretly highly SEO specialized because the people that they're going after
are like inputting typos.
Yeah, exactly. But I like the, I mean, especially in the AAA space, there's so many things that say, you know, single noun colon Rising / The Reckoning.
Yeah, that's very true. I kind of wish that they had kept the question mark, though. What does remain of Edith Finch?
Did they actually have a question mark?
No.
Because I feel like there was, at some point, I feel like this game may have gone through a title transition, but maybe I'm totally
I feel like it must have gone through a lot of transitions, yeah. Because when I first heard that this was a game coming out of Giant Sparrow, the folks who did
The Unfinished Swan,
I thought it would be more gamey because Unfinished Swan is actually kind of gamey.
Yeah. Like
there's certain elements where, you know, you throw things on the wall and it changes the landscape. It feels like a studio that could produce some really cool and interesting work that's not just a sort of purely narrative-driven game.
Yeah.
But what remains of Edith Finch is very much a sort of narrative, quote-unquote, walking simulator experience.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about it. I mean, by its nature, it's very story-driven, so I will say probably the most of the conversation will have to do with the story, but I think there's enough to talk about just purely mechanically and just structurally how it presents itself that
yeah.
It is worth it. So I guess we should just start in that mode of, you know, the walking simulator.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of these games now. I think the last one we played was, what was the one where the people were disappearing? The Rapture.
Oh, everybody's gone to
Another
good SEO bucking.
Yeah.
Maybe that just is the norm now.
Maybe. Like
you have to have a long,
yeah,
exaggerated title.
Yeah.
Hold on. Can we just make a title right now for our... Like, how about the comings and goings of Oliver Winterbottom?
Oh, yeah. Done. Yeah. Watch for it. 2019. We'll be at PAX South. So I remember both of us were pretty down on that game, actually.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, it was because while the game looked really nice, there was a whole bunch of traversing through an environment that was essentially set dressing.
Yes.
You didn't really do much. You walked super slow, which is a really pedantic thing, but it actually made a huge impact on my...
Yeah.
On my enjoyment of
the
game. There
was a speed walking button, but it was definitely not fast enough.
And it kind of logarithmically sped up. Like, it wasn't from like 0 to 100 immediately. It just kind of like ramped in a really annoying way. I remember that. And so I was actually a little bit worried that, well, the last time I played one of these games, it was kind of a bummer.
Yes.
And I was even more worried when I started playing this game and the walk is super slow.
The walk is
slow. And I was
super
like, oh God, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you start off like in the woods.
Yes.
Far away from the house.
Yeah.
And there's the sort of monologue that's going over and you're like, oh man, like, is this going to be like mist or something? Or I'm just slowly walking between different locales?
Yeah.
It turns out you're actually just at this really large, structurally unsound...
Oh my God, that house stressed me out.
Didn't it stress you out?
Jeez.
It's super bizarre. It feels like It feels like a home that would be built in, like, Guerneville, like, where I'm from. Yes, but importantly, and I say that because it's probably built by the people who are not, like, amateur architects, yeah. is what it feels like.
Yeah.
Almost like the Winchester... This is like the Winchester Mystery House.
I was just going to say that, yeah. For those who do not live in the San Francisco Bay Area. Actually, you know what? They're making a movie out of that shit.
Why? Is it a horror movie?
I think. There's someone relatively famous playing... Mrs. Winchester, whatever name was. I want to say it's like, it is somewhat of a caliber of like Nicole Kidman-esque
really?
Or something.
Yeah. Check out the trailer in our show notes this week. So yeah, if you don't know what the Winchester Mystery House is, it's this bizarre house built by Mrs. Winchester. Yeah.
Of the Winchester rifle fortune.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she was really into design, and so she kept having... architects build onto her home. There's just a bunch of these elements that are like superfluous buildings stacked on top of one another. It's sold as like a creepy destination when in fact she was just a much more respectable person. But...
Yeah, and there was also like, you know, there's ghost stories of like, oh, the she felt haunted by all the people the guns killed.
Yeah,
and
all
so
the
she
buffalo.
Kept on. Yeah. So I mean, there's, you know, there's a little bit of supernatural there, but there's also just weird architectural choices, stairways that go nowhere, and strangely laid out hallways and stuff.
Which is basically what the design of this home is.
Yeah.
In What Remains of Edith Finch.
Also, if you combined it with kind of like a, you know, Inspector Gadget-esque thing where you pull levers and various crawlways and passageways will come up. All that is to say that the speed of character movement actually is a lot nicer once you get into the house, because the house is so cramped and full that if you could move really fast, you just bounce off the walls all the time.
I would actually be really curious to track, like... how many miles the entire game experience is in a linear way.
Yeah.
And then compared to something like everyone's been raptured, whatever.
That damn rapture.
That rapture game, it's not as linear because you could backtrack and you end up backtracking quite a bit.
Yeah.
But my guess is that this is actually a pretty short game in terms of pure distance.
And it's all stacked kind of. You keep on going up the house. And the way that the story is told is very much like Gone Home, where there's someone who's narrating the story. And the interesting thing, though, is that everything that she says is shown on the screen as a caption that is integrated into the world.
Yeah, it's like a diegetic text over everything.
Things will float through the world, or the text will be painted on a wall and then kind of skitter away after you're done. And I liked it quite a bit, actually.
Yeah.
It drew attention to the fact that there was an economy of writing in the game, because all the writing had to fit on the screen as well as be said.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't overly wordy.
Yeah, definitely. It reminded me of, I forget what it was called, but a few years back, someone did a game where you could play pieces of text that would shape based upon the story. So you could play through an H.P. Lovecraft short story, for example, and when the wind blows, right, the text of those words, the wind blows, sort of appears as wind, and you sort of navigate that space, that the text itself in a sort of 3D environment. That's what it kind of reminded me of, especially in certain scenes where some of the mechanics were tied into the words. Like, you had to move the mouse in a certain way, or the joystick in a certain way to move the words around the screen and rearrange them to be like legible text.
Right. And was there in that game, was that the challenge, or was it just an experiential?
I mean, it was also the challenge, because there would be like jumps and sort of skill-based stuff, but for the most part, it was just experiential.
Right.
And it wasn't the only story. I really will try to dig it up and put it in the show notes, because it's kind of an interesting way of experiencing text.
Right.
But I think at its strongest, when the text sort of made sense to be aligned with the world, it was pretty cool.
Mm.
There were times it felt like I was in a Marvel movie or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was a little bit too meta.
Yeah.
Like, if you open the gate and the word just sort of fly away because the gate has crashed through the words, like it gets a little bit tedious.
Mm. Okay, so going back to Edith Finch, I mean, what else can we say without it being a spoiler? First person, very there's a physicality to it.
Yeah.
When you interact with items, you see the hand come out, you have to move the stick or the mouse to like physically open up a door or lift or turn a knob or whatever.
Which threw me off a little bit, because sometimes to like open something towards you, you would have to move the hand forward.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a little bit of that in the beginning. Yeah. I also think that the way that the story is told, which is basically, so there's a bunch of families, there's a bunch of family members related to Edith Finch, and she's sort of experiencing each of their stories individually.
Yeah.
And those stories are experienced like mini vignettes, like essentially chapters, and each chapter is dedicated to one member of her family. And some of those chapters are their own gameplay experience. Mm-hmm. One is kind of like a comic book, one might be like a platformer, right? And having them each be their own little gameplay thing sort of has its pros and cons. Like, there were times when I really enjoyed it because it felt like, oh, this is a cool little diversion, right? It's not all one experience. I'm not just walking through this house to get this linear story. There are certain beats where I can sort of feel what it might have been like to see the world through the perspective of that particular family member.
Yeah.
Those elements I thought were pretty strong.
Oh, yeah.
There were other segments, though, where they sort of abandoned the idea of experiencing it from that first-person perspective.
Mm.
Those ones I really did not like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as an experience, because it felt like it was very different from the others. It felt a little bit more sort of shoehorned in as like, oh, here's a level, because I came up with an idea of a kind of funny way for you to interact with the world.
Interesting.
And it didn't feel like as natural of a way to unfold the actual story of sort of the Finch family.
I'll be interested to hear which ones you felt worked better and worse, because I feel like there's one in particular that is the masterpiece of this.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Of this game. In a game where I think there are plenty of interesting ways to tell an interactive story.
Yeah.
Where there's not really a fail state, but you're supposed to get a sense of what the theme is by the mechanics of what you're experiencing.
Yeah, I'd be interested. So overall, what did you like this game?
Overall, I thought it was a pretty good game. It reminded me a lot of The Vanishing of Ethan Carter.
Which I did not play.
That is a great game. I wish more people played that game.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this game if it was more challenging. Like, there's actual riddles and
like puzzle elements.
Yeah, there's way more adventure stuff to do in The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. And I think but the setting and the tone of it, even the almost the graphical styling is very similar.
Yeah.
But the world is much bigger.
Is it also set in the Pacific Northwest?
Basically, yeah.
Fuck.
I wonder. We should look that up.
Is this on a ploy from like the Seattle Board of Commerce?
I mean, ever since fucking, I don't know what, the X-Files?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe? Weird shit has been going. Oh, that's no. True. Twin
Peaks.
That's a good
point. Definitely Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks started this whole thing of, hey, weird shit goes on up here.
That's
I guess true. Bigfoot is what really kicked it off.
Yeah, if we want to go way back.
if we want to go way back, I guess the Wendigo.
Really like the Russian occupation of it.
Yeah. So I think...
So you're pretty positive on the game.
I am overall quite positive.
Okay.
But I think there's also... I'm bringing in some real life stuff that is highly influencing my...
Oh, okay.
Read of the game.
That's good, because I think I don't really like this game that much, and I always kind of like it when we disagree, because I feel like I learned quite a bit more about it.
Yeah.
I want to say right off the get-go...
We should also talk about whether we agree or disagree with Ian Bogost. Yeah,
so I was just about to say,
consummate curmudgeon.
Ian Bogost wrote what I thought was actually a pretty decent article, but one that was, of course, a fire starter.
Yeah.
That was essentially Ian Bogost reviews What Remains of Edith Finch.
Yeah.
But while I'm reviewing this, I'm going to piss everybody off by saying this isn't a video game and video games shouldn't be stories and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I don't agree with a lot of what he says, but he's also not wrong, I think, about Edith Finch and about a lot of these quote-unquote walking simulators, which is there are a lot of moments where you question why this was ever a video game when it could have just been a simple story.
Yeah.
I think the answer is that if this were a simple story, it wouldn't be a very good or interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a video game, it is a better story, but... I still, at least from my perspective, it wasn't enough of a compelling story to keep me interested. Mm. And then there were those certain elements that sort of broke me out of it and made me question, like, well, I mean, why bother following this along?
I mean, I think my response to his article was exactly your interpretation, but in the positive sense, where you could easily take a novel and be like,
why wasn't this a movie?
This was a shitty video game. It's like, yeah, that's why they made it a novel, because it would have been a shitty video game. And so it's, this would have been a shitty movie. Yeah, that's exactly why it was a video game, because it's more powerful because it is a video game.
Definitely.
And I think he and a lot of other people miss the point of some video games are not meant to be, were not made with the intent that players will form their own opinion of it. They are meant to make the player feel, they are meant to convey an experience.
Yeah.
And they can either succeed or fail in conveying that experience. But like, for example, that Dragon Cancer was not meant to be something that we formed our own story and narrative around, like Breath of the Wild or something.
Yeah.
It was meant to make us feel like what it is to be a parent with a kid who's sick.
Yeah.
And for us, I remember that game kind of failed. Like, we didn't really like it that much. Mm-hmm. And there were some mechanical parts that didn't feel good. But I think the point is that something like Gone Home is not meant for you to bring necessarily a strong opposite interpretation to it. It is meant for you to feel like what it is to be a young teenage girl in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And you have to evaluate the efficacy on those merits rather than just saying, well, this is not the strength of video games, so don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's exactly why so many people were so hostile about that particular argument. Yeah. Because when you say this game is bad at storytelling and games are bad at storytelling, you get a group of people, especially people who saw themselves as like, hey, I was a young woman growing up in Pacific Northwest dealing with sexuality issues. When you wholly disregard the effects and importance of Gone Home, what you're saying is this particular story isn't worth experiencing, which of course is going to rub people the wrong way. Yeah. Again, I don't think that was Bogost's intent.
Yeah.
I think he does want to rile people up, but I don't think he's totally dismissive of those types of experiences.
Yeah.
But I think you're spot on with taking the game on its own merits. Yeah. And I think Edith Finch is another good example, because there are elements of this story, like that family story, that I think is kind of interesting to experience, right? Yeah. I come from a big family, so there are, like, and I'm sure you have this as well, right? Mm-hmm. But like, there are little legends that pop up around family members that you're never quite sure of what are true or what are not.
Yeah.
And to sort of discover that later in life is kind of an interesting process. And I think that experience alone makes this game an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know. I guess I'm going to sound like an insufferable douche when I say this, but whatever.
Why do you not sound like an insufferable douche?
Fair. I think that the sort of argument that Ian is going for is one that flirts dangerously close to just blind privilege.
Yes.
Because it's something that you and I talk about a lot, where we have these high hopes for VR, where it's like,
Octopus VR?
maybe this medium will help me identify with people that are not like me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we live in the Bay Area. There's plenty of times with me as a white guy, I'm in a bus and it's like, oh, wow, I'm literally the only white person in this bus.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty rare thing in America to feel like, oh, wow, I'm like in this microcosm, I am the minority. But with something like, with something like a video game, you can mechanically convey those experiences of people that you don't identify with in a way where you can at least get the tiniest pebble of familiarity with it.
Yeah.
And if you start to discount games on the basis of, well, this is not a emergent story, this is not a systems-driven process, it's like, it's not your systems-driven process, but it is about a system that other people have to go through, and therefore you can get a little bit of taste about it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I don't know.
And it's something that is like so is subjectively experienced.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all that is to say he's a good writer, and it's a provocative argument, which is worth reading.
If you want to read his best article, read the one about the McRib.
Yes, the McRib one is classic. Good. The Star Trek episode about the people who speak in metaphors is great.
Oh, I haven't read that one.
Oh, it's a really... You should... It kind of... assumes some knowledge of
Star Trek
of watching that episode.
Oh, okay.
But it's pretty good.
Cool.
Anyway, so we talk about spoilers of
Let's get into spoilers. We're gonna talk about exactly what remains of Edith.
Yeah. Oh man, it delivers on its title.
That's true.
It delivers on its title. Okay, so how do you want to do this? You want to talk about some of I have the vignettes in order here.
Yeah, let's go by order, because I have the family tree, yeah. Which, by the way, is one of my favorite pause menus in a really long time.
It looks great.
But the story of her family is experienced in a different way.
Yeah, you experience it not necessarily in linear order. Okay, so Molly Finch was a little girl who was a child movie star.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was Edith Finch's... Sorry, the family tree is a little bit confusing.
It is confusing.
I'm pretty sure it would have been Edith Finch's great aunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she died when she was 10 years old. Yes.
Okay.
She is her grandmother's...
Because Edie was the grandma. Or the great-grandma. Just the grandma, I think. Yeah.
Edie was the great-grandma. Correct. I don't know, man. This tree is kind of complicated. Sam and Walter were the grandparents.
So I want to say Edie and Odin,
Sam. The god Odin.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I mean, this family goes back, right? Her great great grandmother, 1917.
Right, because Sam and because Edith's mother's brothers both died. You're right. So great grandma.
Yeah, yeah. So Molly.
Yeah.
The first. The first vignette in the game.
Yeah.
10 years old.
Yeah. This is also where the game makes its first big statement.
Yes.
Yeah.
with the vignettes in particular.
Yeah.
This is actually one of my favorite vignettes.
I think it's a great one.
Yeah.
It also had one of the most hilarious animated GIFs of 2017.
With the shark flopping down the hill.
That was
really good. So this is kind of like a sad story because she's basically sent up to her room without any food.
She's like she's a showbiz child. And,
right.
Yeah.
She gets hungry.
Yeah.
And she gobbles up a bunch of random shit she finds in her room.
Super sad. She like is eating the toothpaste and stuff. Yeah.
And then she eats like red berries.
Yeah.
Which I guess I presume all red berries in stories are poisonous.
Yeah.
At this point, just don't eat red berries.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering, and so as you're playing as this little girl, which also this game is interesting because you play as children.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which is pretty rare in games. And bad things happen to children, which is super rare in games.
Yes.
And then you kind of see a cat and you chase it onto the balcony and all of a sudden you become the cat.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm pretty sure Molly is tripping balls on whatever those berries were.
Yeah.
So she starts hallucinating, like living through the cat.
Yeah.
And then the cat catches a bird and you become a bird, which I thought was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like diving mice onto the field. Yeah. And then you become, I think from there... an octopus?
It's a monster.
Oh, yeah, right. It's some, like, strange monster with
tentacles. But it's just a tentacle that's eating people.
Yeah.
And then the monster is underneath your bed at the end.
Yeah. So, one of the things that I liked the most about this vignette is it delivers on the idea that this is an experience from the perspective of the girl without being the girl. Like, you're not just Molly, right?
Yeah.
You're all these other creatures, and there's this, darkness and ominousness to her story in a way that, like, a children's fairy tale often is. Like, if you ask a little kid, oh, tell me a story about a monster, like, they might say some dark, creepy shit that you would be shocked to hear coming out of a child's mouth, right? But hearing it in this context provides a sense that, like, look, even as a little kid, kids know when something's wrong, when something's up, when things aren't necessarily right.
Yeah.
I don't know whether or not this kid was abused per se, but I certainly get a sense that, like, there's a darkness to her life.
Yeah. She didn't have a good life, or she was, you know.
Yeah. And that's, I think it's a really strong start for this story in particular. Because the whole plot, right? The whole idea of this building being so large and unstructurally sound is that every time someone dies in the family, instead of just moving someone else in, they wall off the room and just build more rooms on top of that house.
Yeah.
I think to begin with a story of a child who we can right off the bat say is innocent and say, look, at the very foundation of this home is a tragedy, is a pretty good place to start when you're talking about a story that's kind of like this whole family's cursed to die.
Yeah. And they make a statement about how far they're willing to go in the story. They make a statement about leaving the confines of the traditional walking simulator and letting you play as a shark who's flopping its way into the ocean. It's just, it's an interesting opening salvo for like, all right, we're going to go places in this game. Okay, so moving on, Odin Finch, the family patriarch.
Yes.
You learn how the house got to where it is.
Yes. Basically crashed the house. It was like a house on a boat.
Yeah, he put his house on a boat and tried to sail to the New World or whatever.
Idiot. And then, no wonder this family is cursed, by the way.
I mean,
also, there's no doubt in my mind, like, this family's cursed.
There's no two ways about it.
To be perfectly honest, it's actually one of the things that pulls me out of the story. Mm. Like, especially as we get towards the end.
There's kind of like a magical realism element to it that they push kind of far.
I mean, even as you climb up the house and you see exactly how structurally unsound this place is, like, it becomes less real.
Yeah.
Just as you really want to be hitting the crescendo of your story and be coming back to this very real character of Edith Finch and her experience discovering this stuff,
right?
Which I think is at odds. Like, I think it's difficult to have a story about this girl who, again, major spoilers for the end, is pregnant with her first child.
Did you notice that?
That she was pregnant?
The first thing I did is look down and I was like, oh, this person's pregnant.
I thought I just had a belly.
Yeah.
To be honest, I was just like, it's not like a huge pregnant belly, right? I mean, she could have just had a big lunch.
There's kind of a lump. I don't know.
It's cold, man. There could have been like a sweater, you know? We don't know how many layers she's wearing.
Yeah. But then at a certain point, it confirms it when she's talking to someone else. Yeah. It's like, what are you even talking about? Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Anyway, Odin Finch's whole thing is you're looking through a Viewmaster, which I thought was kind of funny because I had one of those as a kid.
Yeah.
But that was very... And I think it's also cool to have that as the oldest thing because it's like the least technological thing that you have and you're like making that connection. Okay. So Odin Finch, he put his house on a boat. He crashed his house. And so instead they built a new house.
Yep. And he died, right? He died on the boat.
He died. Yeah. He died out there on the house. Yeah. And the tide took him away.
And that house is in the background of the game the entire time. You could sort of see it just off of the water.
Yeah, the house kind of sunk close.
You'd think you'd hire like a scuba diver to like, I mean, get his bones or something.
Yeah, I mean, they, instead they just look at it as a weird memory. Okay, Calvin Finch, one of the boys of, I guess, the grandmother.
Yes.
Edith's grandmother.
This would have been Molly's brother.
Yeah. There was twin boys basically. Mm-hmm. And one of them, like in a freak accident. That's the saddest thing about so much of
these. This is the swing set guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. So he's really into the idea of being an astronaut.
Yep.
It was a really poignant note that the brother wrote to him. It didn't necessarily seem like something a kid would be capable of writing.
Definitely.
But it was something that I wish I could write, but I'm also a grown man, not a 12-year-old.
Yes.
However, I thought the mechanics of this were really interesting because I didn't realize that I had to be pressing both leg buttons.
Yeah, I struggled for a good long while. Yeah. Just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. I know that I'm supposed to kill myself as this little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're just trying to swing. And again, this is one of those things where it subtly shows you with the text rotates around your other shoe, and so like, oh, that other shoe is also active.
Yep.
And you can start going with
it, which I think is really nice.
Yeah,
again, with the sort of extreme magical realism, this is another moment where as you're swinging back and forth, you do eventually circle completely around the tree branch, which I don't think is really, I mean, I guess theoretically it's possible.
Hey man, this kid did it.
But he does it like multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, then it becomes magical realism and he flies
but
out.
The one benefit, though, is knowing that what I'm actually hearing is the story written by his brother.
Yeah.
Who is creating an imaginary tale about how he lost his brother in the swing set accident makes a little bit more sense.
It feels
sense.
Like a legend of like what would happen.
The one thing, though, I'll say, though, is this is the moment where the game started to feel a little bit too much like an Edward Gorey story where like, oh, let me talk about this family and everyone died in new and unique different ways, you know? It almost feels like, could you have just told a smaller story and cut out some of these family members and it would have been more believable?
I was thinking about that too. I mean, I guess the question is, you know, what mechanics do you feel are important? Or what stories do you think are important to have?
I don't think this one is important to have.
I'm trying to think of the themes. It's more, I mean, some family members are more bold than others. Some mm-hmm. are willing to take more chances. We probably don't spend enough time with this kid to know.
Yeah. Well, he's also just a little kid, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, his twin brother, yeah. I believe, and we might be jumping ahead a little bit.
That's Sam, right?
Ends up dying because of a kite accident.
Yeah.
Right?
Wait, is that the other? No, I think that's...
Is that a different brother?
Yeah, I think Sam, the guy who grows up to be the Edith's mom's dad.
Oh, you're right.
Is his twin brother.
Oh, okay.
And that guy dies tragically because he's trying to teach his daughter how to hunt.
Yes.
That's the one with the camera.
That one I liked. I thought that one was really good.
Yeah. Well, and it's also sad because he's trying to do the correct thing, and he's trying to make sense of this world that took his brother by being super disciplined and trying to teach his daughter to defend herself.
But there's also like a flippancy with death that he has. Like you can tell his daughter's having a hard time with the idea of she's taking an animal's life.
Yeah.
And he's just oblivious to it.
Yeah. And he also dies in the most flippant throwaway freak accident possible, where we think that this deer is dead. It's not, and it jerks up, and then he slips off the cliff.
Guys, double tap.
Yeah.
It's not hard to understand, okay? This isn't a rule just for zombies.
Anything.
Anything that was once alive, double tap.
Yeah, I thought that was good. It was also, you saw the interplay between two people in the family very acutely, mm-hmm. and you understood why maybe Edith's mom was overbearing or...
Yeah.
It said a lot about her, too.
I think at this point, too, you can kind of see how the legend of a curse could come about.
Yeah.
Also in the way that the family doesn't really confront a lot of these issues.
Yeah.
And they sort of repeat themselves.
I mean, the metaphor they take literally is just they board up the room and never talk about it again.
I mean, it is a dysfunctional family, for sure.
Going back to Barbara... This was the one that you talked about with the comic book, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really did not like this vignette.
This one was tough. I see what they were going for, but the movement was just kind of weird.
This is basically Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
Yeah. In comic book form. It almost felt like Beautiful Joe or something.
It did, yeah. Yeah.
And this is one of those stories that is not told from the perspective of the character. It's told through this perspective of this like comic book.
Yeah.
And really lays on thick the idea that the family is, in fact, actually cursed. And there's these monsters. But
did you just interpret it as this was pop culture's interpretation of the family?
Yeah, but like pop culture's interpretation of a family, it just feels like a weird... Who's writing this story?
Yeah.
How did they get the publication rights for this story? Is this family really so well known? There are families that have tragically lost family members. And especially when we're talking about
was kind of a movie star. He was like a little kid.
I mean, for sure. But when we're talking about early 20th century, right? There's not everyone's family is dying potentially, right? It's not it's a huge surprise that they've lost some people here. So she's a movie star and she has this mysterious disappearance where essentially she's been murdered. A piece of her tongue is off. But
her ear.
This is also a case though where... the reality, the quote-unquote reality, which is she disappeared and they never ever found her body, is also so strange that it feels like it doesn't fit within the rest of this subdued story, where
it might be the most fantastical of everything. Actually, no, the second most fantastical.
Yeah,
because Milton is
it's definitely the second most fantastical, but it's up there in terms of jarring me out of the experience.
Yeah,
again, I think this is another story that just could have been cut entirely because it felt the most outlandish in the way that it was told and what was being told about it. Or rein it in. Maybe you drop a couple of hints that Barbara just left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe she faked her own death or something. But I think we're supposed to walk away from that genuinely believing that she was murdered.
Yeah. I basically, at the end of that, I can draw no conclusion from this. And I just kind of walked away.
But then why, why bother then?
Yeah. Right? I mean, maybe this is one of those things that makes it a tighter story if you reel it in a bit. We talked about Barbara. Walter. I think Walter's was the one that I was the most put off by.
One was this?
I think Walter was the one who was living in the basement.
Yeah.
This one didn't make any sense to me. There was someone, and you know, Walter has seen...
Well, and the grandmother knows that he's living in the basement, allegedly?
Yeah, it was strange. And it seemed like, I guess he had seen some of his kids die or whatever. And I mean, it just seems like... Wouldn't someone figure out?
Well, and then also, he had a radio, but it seemed to imply that he thought something bad was happening because every now and then the house would shake.
Yeah.
And I got a sense that he thought he was genuinely like a last survivor in like the apocalypse.
Right.
And eventually he breaks out and gets like hit by a train.
Well, I think those were the rumblings.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the train. Yeah. But again, this is another moment that felt way too much in the realm of Edward Gorey. Of like, let me tell you this comical story of this guy who doesn't realize it's a train, gets out, gets hit by a train. Like, it's almost like... like, is this fucking Final Destination 5? Like, why are these things happening
to this family? Final Destination Finch.
Like, again, it's just, it's a bizarre story, and one that I think, had it been reined in, had it been a story about this guy who isolates himself. Like, look, imagine we just found a cabin, and he lived out there, and then he died because of a fucking tooth infection that that got infected. And he, you know what I mean? Like, there are ways to... talk about a family that's incapable of dealing with the tragedies in their life and therefore perpetuates their own tragedies in a way that doesn't come off like it's being written by like a children's novelist, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if Sam was the right winner.
Not that children's novels aren't good, but I think in this one it's trying to walk that line, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I could see that. It was definitely one where I, even the comic book one to me was just something that you could just be like, well, that's the legend of whatever happened to her.
Right.
But they seem to imply that he
was legitimately
literally, he literally was living in the basement for decades.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Only to escape one day and get hit by a train.
Also, was there a toilet in the basement? You go to the basement.
Yeah, well, there was that trash heap in
there. He was down there for like 30 years.
I mean, it looked pretty nasty. There was a lot of peanut butter down
there. I wanted Edith then to vomit. I mean, she's pregnant, right? Yeah. She should have like some stomach problems. I don't know.
All right, what else we got here? Sam, Gregory Finch. Ugh, this one was the most brutal one. Jeez.
Gregory is this the kite guy?
This is the baby.
Oh, yeah.
1976 to 1977.
This one was good.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, and I think the way that the narrative framing device talked about it was also good because it talked about a divorce.
Yep.
And the fact that he wrote her a letter in the divorce papers was... I don't know. It felt like a truthful, sad, realistic divorce after a child dies.
Totally. Yeah. I think that clearly they're best at telling the story of children because this is where the magical realism makes the most sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We're bridging that gap where you can walk that line easier because that's the line that children walk all the time where fact and fiction blend together and like things really are like mystical and strange and bizarre and there are dark elements weaved in with all of the rest.
Yeah.
Like the fact that the baby drowns himself, but at the same time he's living this experience where like all of these things are alive and there's magical. Like,
there's musical accompaniment to it. I thought this was a really powerful one. And also just saying like, we don't, I think for obvious reasons, I think about this a lot lately where like, what do you see? Like, what does the world look like to you? And it was just a really elegant way of,
oh, you're tripping balls. Yeah. All like, the time.
This is amazing. You think this little lion is dancing.
Okay. Yeah. What an idiot. Yeah. Baby.
But again, it was a really hard thing to play through because you're playing as the baby.
Yeah.
You're having this experience, and you know what's happening, but you are playing as a character that doesn't know what's happening.
Yes.
Which is, again, when I come back to the Boghost article, which is like, the point is not to actually simulate
being a baby
system. It is to try to give you the barest inkling of a sense of what it could be like to be this other being, i.e. a baby.
Experientially.
Yeah. And so I thought that was a really strong and super sad vignette.
Yep.
Okay, and now this is just the like 1-2-3 punch of kids dying that we're coming up to here. So was Gus the one with the kite?
I think Gus was the kite. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Because his dad is getting remarried.
Yes. So this is one where it got a little obnoxious with the like letters because the text is in the sky and you're taking a kite or whatever. I thought he was going to be struck by lightning.
Me too. I was like, oh, this is it.
Well, I mean, especially because it fits into the larger Edward Gorey sort of theme. Yeah. Instead, he knocks over like a wedding tent and gets crushed, which is a real bummer.
I was about to say, well, and that too, because at that point I thought, okay, the game's going to go crazy. I'm going to get struck by lightning. But it's way more realistic that a kid knocks over a tent and dies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really appreciate that, that was the case. The kite's a little bit too magical in the scene. Like, you could really just run the ground, man. Like, Gus is an amazing kite flyer because I would never have pulled that off in a million years. The one thing, though, that I really liked about the scene was also that it's set to this experience that for a kid could be a really upsetting and traumatic experience. You know, like this.
And he wants to blow away the entire.
Again, going back to Molly's scene, this was another scene where the fiction of, and the game experience did tie to those sort of darker themes because you're flying this kite and it's fun, but you know it's just a diversion. Like this is just something to distract you from the fact that you're pissed that your dad's getting remarried.
Okay, that's Gus. Milton. Milton was the one who they built a little tower for him, right? Was that him?
I thought the Milton. Yes, yes, you're right.
Right, because it's Lewisburg and Louisville. Like that's okay.
Yeah.
Milton. So this is where we realize that Milton is actually the king from the Unfinished Swan.
Yes. So I'm not. I don't even remember having finished the Unfinished Swan appropriately. Yeah. So what's the deal here? Did this kid like disappear into a painting? Is that
basically, and the whole story of the Unfinished Swan is about that. It's about waking up in this world and figuring out that there's a king here that's, you know, has this kind of sad story behind him, and he's lost his family and all of this stuff, which I think was it. I think it helps a lot if you played the Unfinished Swan and you remember it, because then you're able to link together the themes of abandonment and kind of this wistfulness for a world that you left behind or maybe never really knew. And if you don't, if you've never played it, it's like, oh, okay, well, this is just where the game really gets strangely magical and whimsical because it's like saying, this kid just disappeared. We lost this kid. Yeah, I don't know where he went.
You know, until I saw the Unfinished Swan stuff, I actually thought this was kind of the most interesting element to it because of all of the people in the Finch family, this is the person that could have actually made a legitimate escape. Yeah. Like, they could be genuinely gone.
And maybe, and you know, according to the Unfinished Swan, maybe he did. Like, that's what happened kind of at the end of the Unfinished Swan. Yeah.
He's like happy?
Yeah. I mean, there's, well, there's interpretations, I guess. But I mean, he did leave. Like, there was something that he wanted to get away from.
Yeah. His fucked up family in their shitty house.
I mean, I can see as a kid, it would be so cool living in that tower. But then as an adult, it's like, none of this is structured.
No. I mean, he probably stubbed his toe for the thousandth time and was like, I fucking had it. This is absurd.
I'm going into a magical door.
So I can't even fit into shoes anymore. How much do you want to bet that the next trilogy, because this is clearly going to be the Finch family trilogy, is going to be Barbara. And they're going to make like some fucking horror game.
Maybe.
You know?
Barbara from the comic book?
From the comic book.
Maybe. I mean, Barbara's story is already done. I mean, if anything, it will be whatever.
Edith Jr.?
Yeah. Well, no, Edith Jr. is already Edith. It'll be her daughter.
Right. Yeah. Well, I presume she's just Edith the Third.
Edith the Third, I guess so, maybe. Okay, so Lewis. Yes. I thought this was a fucking masterpiece.
This is the Yes. This is my favorite.
Yeah. And this is where there's a kid who is depressed, kind of dependent on marijuana.
Yeah.
He doesn't really know what he wants to do with his life.
Marijuana is chemically addictive.
He likes to play video games, but he sucks at them, which is a funny throwaway line.
Yep. I love that he has the furry psychedelic blacklight posters.
The crushed velvet, like black velvet.
Yeah, before my time, but definitely something I recognize from like my brother's bedroom and stuff.
And he gets this dead end job at the cannery, and to deaden his humdrum life, he starts to fantasize about himself being a king.
Yep.
And the whole mechanic of, you have a fish, you bring the fish to the right, chop off its head, throw it in the bucket.
Yeah.
And you just keep doing that with the right stick. Well, on the left stick, the fantasy world becomes an interactive maze, and then the maze becomes isometric and top down.
Yeah.
And then the maze becomes like 3D action oriented. Yeah. And then the maze, and like as you go
and
on,
and there's like choose your own adventure story elements in there. It's amazing. Really cool.
You can figure out that, oh, like maybe he's gay. Maybe that's another reason why he's depressed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's closeted, and it's just, he's just trying to hide his unhappiness in this fantasy that he has. Right. And the more he fantasizes, the more that portion of the screen takes up the entire screen.
Yep.
Even though you're still doing the job behind the game.
I really like the idea that when you're playing a game like this, especially one that doesn't require a whole lot of mechanical skill, you really can fall into a rhythm of like fish chop gone, fish chop gone, to a point where like I was taking pride in my fish chopping efficiency, right, while still following along with the like magical story. And you could see why. You could see why entertaining the concept of like a magical thing is so compelling for someone stuck in an unhappy situation.
That's why I'm so mad at the BOGOST article. Because it's like, have you ever had a job that you just hate? This is it.
Or like, you know, this is sort of a, what escapism is about, right? And when you look at some of the other stories, right? Like the little kids, Molly in particular, I think you find that theme runs through a lot of Edith Finch, right? Where escaping to this fantasy is better than living in this reality, even when the reality is fantastical in its own right. And I think this was probably the best told. I also think it's really strong because you know that there's a closer age connection between this character and Edith. And Edith talks about, like, I really liked Sam. Like, and, you know, I have a brother who's 7 years older than me, and he's alive, thank goodness. But, like, I was imagining, like, how impactful it would have been to have my brother die at a young age when he is contributing so much to my sense of identity. And surely that must have been the case here. And if anything, this story made me retroactively more hostile towards some of those earlier stories that felt like fluff to me because they didn't tie as much to Edith. Like, I would have rather had four family members that they talk about, but maybe multiple elements of Sam's story.
You know?
Don't just have it just be, oh, this is the death, right? Like, connected to this larger narrative, right? Especially if we're meant to take, like, you know, there's a through line between all of these family members, but really it's about the way that the family is structured and the sort of tragedy that gets passed down from child to child. And that didn't, that just wasn't as effective as it could have been. And I think it's because they wanted to have these individual little mechanical moments. And I think Gone Home is even more effective in that regard, right? Like, there are fewer family members.
The scope is smaller.
The scope is smaller, but you could see how, you could see how one family member's strategy weaves into the other and weaves into the other. And by the time you get to the end of Gone Home, spoilers for the end of Gone Home, but like you find a character who's finally able to establish her own identity outside of the circle of the family and escape it. And that's really, really rewarding. The catharsis you get at the end of Gone Home is incredibly satisfying because it weaved those things together. There is some catharsis at the end of Edith Finch, but I don't think it's for the same reason and doesn't come from that same source of that really strong through line.
So that brings us to basically the last trio, Great Grandma Edie, and Dawn. And it's, I think this stuff is, some of this stuff hits well because it's really practical things that everyone deals with. Like, how do you deal with an aging relative that is stubborn about their aging?
Don't leave her in a home that could collapse at any fucking second.
And she's gone. You know, she wandered out into the shores and something happened. And then Dawn,
the Wendigo probably fucking took her.
I think the Dawn story is good because you, I had sympathy towards the mother at the end, especially like she tried to escape to India. She, you know, she married someone that, you know, was kind of, she tried to escape her confines and then ended up, you know, kind of going back anyway. She ended up back at the house and then she died probably of cancer or something. They talk about her getting sick and getting better and getting sick again.
Though at this point, it also makes me question whether or not the family really is cursed because, I mean, they live a life, you know, like,
well, I mean, some of them do, like if you're 10 or,
you know, Edie was like 80 or whatever and she's still spry.
Yeah, of course, she had to watch every single member of her family die a weird, gruesome death.
That's very true. I mean, she was remarkably, like, you know, cogent for all of those.
Plus, she was from the old country. She had that weird Norwegian accent or whatever.
True. She was from the old country. She had the old gods on her side.
Yeah.
She probably sacrificed shit to the Wendigo, and that's what let her live.
I mean, Odin was, you know, there.
Exactly. So in her storyline, though, again, another moment that was just too magical for me. You sort of wander through the mists. And I guess this is as Edie, right?
Yes, I think so. I think that's her.
You wander through the mist because there was like, I don't fucking know, the tsunami or some shit, and like the tide goes out and
yeah, the house there was an earthquake, and so it messes with the tides, and so the tide gets real low.
And a light turns on in the old house. And there's a sense that like, oh, they're going to explain the source of this curse, or something is going to be illuminated, and then they don't bother with that, which I thought was kind of a bummer. Like, if you're going to go really magical, then just go fucking magical. Yeah. Like, have her walk in, and Odin's there, and he's like, oh, I stole rice from a sea witch or something, you know?
I mean, I think the way I interpreted it was much like Gregory Finch.
Mm.
She's senile.
Okay.
And she has these fleeting memories of what was once a part of her life and things that are real enough to her.
But at the same time, though... And she wanders off.
Like, that's old senile people do that all the time.
I mean, yes. But at the same time, the family is also really cursed, you know? Like, people have died all the time from freakish shit. Like, Barbara was murdered by the Wendigo, you know? Like, something is going on.
I mean, like, there... I would say... There's plenty of people that, I mean, I live a relatively charmed life, but there are people even like, for example, the Kennedy family.
Yeah.
That fucking family is cursed.
Well, hey, pro tip, the Kennedy family is cursed. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that there are plenty of families out there that just bad shit happens.
That's true.
I think your criticism, though, is they err a little bit too much on the side of way too much bad shit happening.
And it's not just the bad shit. It's how the bad shit happens and how they express that bad shit through this, like, magical, transportive vignettes. And some of them are just so full of the sort of magical, strange element that I can't help but feel like it's true. And also, we should say, at this point, Edith Finch essentially confirms that she's cursed. Like,
she thinks she is. She thinks she's totally bought into this.
Right.
Well, and plus her grandmother, her great-grandmother believes it and has been passing this down to her.
But this isn't the moment like you'd get in Gone Home where she's like, actually, my whole family are fucking bonkers. I refuse to believe that. I'm going to go move in with my boyfriend in New York City and we're going to be great. Like, that doesn't happen. Instead... Yeah. She's like, if you're reading this, I'm probably dead because the curse got me. And lo and behold, like, if you are her child reading the story and experiencing this narrative, then, like, guess what? You really are cursed. Maybe don't live in Seattle anymore.
I mean, I think if you were to... Again, I think it might be there's just too many coincidences because the poetry of someone who's losing their mind but still has enough of their memories to go out to something that's familiar with them is exactly how old people wander away and die.
Yeah.
I mean, at Alzheimer's nursing homes, they have fake bus stops.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, this is
something... And fake houses built in fake lakes.
I mean, they might as... And that starts to put it to question, okay, is that actually the house out there, or is that just... Or is that just a rock formation? Yeah, is that just a, you know, how are we reading into this? It starts to question all that.
I mean, I think to add on to the other elements of that make it so mystical is the house itself, right? Like, you go to the cemetery and there are graves, like, everywhere. Yeah. Like, everything is slightly off, right? Yeah. Even the fact that, I mean, again, it sounds super nitpicky, but the wiring of the house works so well. You know, you go to the top and, like, the light is already on in the room. Like, who's paying for the electricity bill? You know what I mean? Like, there's just all these little elements that remind you that this is a crafted space. Almost like from, you know, the magical hand of the game designer is felt, I think, in a way that is intentional because they want it to feel unsettling and built.
It's not like Gone Home where... If you hear a crash and a pop, it's like, oh, it's because the light bulb burst.
Right. And and they take the whole, like, hidden passageways to a new extreme in Edith Finch they don't even do in Gone Home, right? So again, like, it feels so manufactured that when I'm meant to rein it in and buy into the story once again, it's a challenge.
Yeah. So finally, you get to the point where she is going to write the rest of the journal for her kid. And then you play... I think for maybe the first and only time in a mainstream video game, you play a baby being born going through a birth canal. Yeah,
I bet you there's another game out there where you are birthed in a first-person perspective. Yeah. This is the only one I've ever played.
Yeah, I mean, there's countless games out there. Yeah. But a game that has made it through Microsoft certification, this is probably the only one.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
What I will say, though, This is also a magical realism version of childbirth, because this is like clean and glorious and easy.
Well, I mean, you don't know. You're just in there.
Well, there's like a shining light, and it's just like, you just go right there.
I mean, it's fucking bright. Have you ever seen a newborn? Like,
that's,
they are pissed.
True. But like, I want like the elbow to get in the way and be like, oh, God damn it, I'm stuck. And then like a doctor's hand come up there. And,
I thought it was really funny that it... I recognized what it was because there was contractions.
Yeah. Oh,
it was on a, it was this tube, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I see the shape at the end. It's like, oh, I know that. And also then it starts, I played it with a controller at a certain point, because I got too lazy and I wanted to lean back. Yeah. Also, Sam was sleeping on me as I was playing this game.
You're like, Sam, you just went through this.
Yeah. And I was like, is this realistic? is there truth? But then I was like, oh, it's vibrating with the contractions. Every time you hold down the trigger, it's a contraction that pushes.
See, I should have played with a controller. I played on mouse and keyboard.
Yeah. And so there's, and also you are like doing the squeeze, and when you squeeze, it contracts, and then the rumble happens, and you get pushed towards the.
And that's how babies are born, everybody.
And little did you know that there's weird writing on the inside of the birth canal.
It's true.
Yeah.
Just well wishes.
And then at the end, you see that the person that you see in the very opening scene of the game with the cast on her arm and the flower is Edith Finch's daughter.
Yep.
And she's gone back to the house to her certain doom.
Yes. Exactly. You'd think that, like, I don't know, there's got to be some city council that will condemn this fucking house at some
point. We need to a motion to burn the Finch residence to the ground.
It's clearly cursed, sir.
Yeah. And I thought,
ancient Wendigo burial ground.
and that is what remains of her. Like, that, what remains of Edith, and you can tell
a diary entry.
Yeah, and her daughter, and because, and I think the implication is that she died in childbirth.
Yeah.
And so that is the last thing that remains of her, and there you go. There's the story.
I think if I were Edith Finch, I would just not write the journal and be like, fuck it.
If I don't write it, it won't happen.
If I don't write it, like, she's never going to go back, and the curse will be lifted.
Well, she was saying, if you're reading this, I guess I know what happened.
Right. In fact, we are cursed. Yeah. If you're reading this, spoiler alert, you're
cursed.
Fucked.
Yeah.
Do me a favor. Stop having kids. End this curse. What are we doing? Like, why are we keeping this whole Finch thing going?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably that's one of the bigger questions at the end, which is, how does one persist in the face of a potential curse?
Yeah.
And you just have to keep it going, I guess.
I guess. I kind of wish it didn't end with... I partly like it that it ends with a child, but on the other hand, this child didn't go through the house in the same... Like, she just doesn't have the same connection to this family.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely sure the way that Edith wrote that last journal entry.
Well, the assumption is that she's also writing the journal throughout while she's finding the story of the relatives. So
right.
She's
like, and then I went into this room, and there was like a weird puzzle.
Well, and so the daughter is now privy to all of the Finch.
Yeah. Lore. I'm just wondering if, like, would you not have written just a slightly better story?
And then we lived happily ever after.
Or, like, let me tell
you, all these children totally didn't die.
Let me tell you about your father and how I met him at, like, a fishing village. Or, you know what I mean? Like, there's other things that you could include here instead of, like, by the way, let me tell you about your great-great uncle who lived to be 12 and died in, like, a boating accident. Like, okay.
Did they ever make any comment on who her father was?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I mean, we know very little of, like, people outside of the Finch. Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah.
Maybe this whole story is just, like, a warning. Don't leave the mother country.
Stay there.
This is just an anti-immigrant narrative.
Yeah. I think... Yeah, I guess not. I guess they didn't say anything about Edith's partner.
Thankfully, they're not cursed by association.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You would really hate to marry into a curse. I mean, that's just really the worst.
So, honey, I meant to tell you, oh, no, do you have a lot of debt or something? Well, we can overcome this. Oh, no, I'm cursed.
Oh, no. The dowry is a life debt to this fucking Egyptian god.
Also, we're moving into this.
Yeah, by the way, I got a really great lease on this apartment up in Seattle.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, like, overall, I feel like I was more positive on it, but a lot of it was me kind of pulling in my own family stuff into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that the mechanics of telling the story won me over despite some of the plot holes of the meta story.
Yep.
But I could see why. I can easily see why the meta story is like, all right, this is all very convenient.
Yes. This is to the point where I think if you were on the fence about buying it, just watch someone else play it.
Yeah. I mean, it's rough because...
I mean, I hate to say that.
The control of it, though, is, I would say, more...
But only in certain scenes.
I mean, it's at least as important as it is in Gone Home.
Yes, that's true. I'll
at least. Yeah, if not more.
Totally. But Gone Home is just a better story.
Yeah, it's a better story, but if the point of this game is to challenge yourself to feel like a person that you aren't, then one could argue that
controlling it
is an inherent requirement.
Definitely, definitely. If you're into games like these, go for it.
Oh yeah. I mean, if that is the worst thing we could possibly say, but fans of the genre, well, it's like, I would say maybe someone who has not ever played a video game, maybe Gone Home makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be...
It's better than Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
Yes. And also, I think the story is better. I think the story definitely is much... It's much more personal because it is smaller and it's not... It doesn't dabble in as many, like, weird religious overtones and stuff.
My one request is that future game designers not set their games in the Pacific Northwest for these, like, linear stories... and maybe just rein in the secret passageways. You know what I mean? Most houses don't have secret passageways. I don't have a fucking basement, okay? Let alone, like, a cupboard that goes into my study.
I mean, have you tried to, you know, pick at every floorboard yet? You don't know what's going
to
open.
I mean, honestly, what we should have seen was, like, you open the mailbox and you get all of these cease and desists from the city for all these illegal buildings without permits.
We're suing you. We're condemning this house.
Exactly.
Yeah. You haven't paid your power bill and all. Yeah.
Well, look forward to that when the comings and goings of, what did I say?
Yes.
Edward Winterbottom.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes me even more excited to play another Giant Sparrow game because I thought the Unfinished Swan was an extremely good game. Mm-hmm. And I thought that this game probably took more chances and was willing to go out on a limb in many ways and also took a chance at being really short. Like it's, I don't know, it's a 2-hour game or something.
Yeah, it's short. It actually makes me more excited for Tacoma because it feels like, that studio, Fulbright, will now sort of evolve it a little bit more in a way that I think that some of the people who've come afterwards have done, but just maybe not as have not been as experimental as I hope Fulbright will be with Tacoma.
Agreed. All right, well, that was a hefty. That debrief was half as long as the game. So if you're on the fence, just go fucking play the game.
Yeah, seriously.
ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and ExperiencePoints.net is our house on the hill.
Yeah, don't talk to the city about it.
We have 426 rooms on our house. You can listen to each and every one of those rooms wherever you happen to find podcasts.
Yep.
Do us a favor, tell your friends about the show, and find us online. Send us an email.
Cool. All right, everyone. Until next time. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye. Every time we